Supernatural creatures? Up next, we'll talk with a real witch on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Even though Halloween has come and gone, we still are dealing with the supernatural. Maja Dawu is with us, a practicing witch, artist, scholar of alchemy and occult lore, whose interest in the esoteric sciences spans her entire life. And after completing her bachelor's degree in biochemistry, Maja studied oriental medicine and acupuncture while training martial arts, and later earned her master's degree in transformational psychology with a focus on shamanism, the I Ching, and the ancestors in her thesis work. Maja lectures occasionally on mysterious topics in Los Angeles and educates the public community through her not-for-profit, The Well Wishers. Noted author, she's got a lot of books out there, including White Witch Tarot, The Secret Source, and A Witch's Bestiary, Visions of Supernatural Creatures. Welcome, Maja Dawu, to Coast to Coast. Hi, Maja.
Hi, George.
Good to have you with us, and I hope you are away from the fires out there in California. Are you?
I am, thank goodness, but I know a lot of people who are really getting ravaged by them. It's outrageous.
Oh, it is, and it's so sad. 42 to 44 deaths now. They're looking for 200 people, and it's probably going to get worse. We need to pray for rain, Maja. Can we do that?
We do. I have done that before. In fact, when a lot of old witches would, use work in order to influence the weather, and I did an experiment once on my Facebook a few years ago when there were the King fires, and I had everyone concentrate their attention on it, and there was no rain in the forecast, and the next day it rained. So, it's not scientific, but it kind of worked.
Yeah, we've done this before, and I did it earlier in the program tonight to hope that we can get something. And Gosh, it just they need help. Those incredible firefighters need a little help from upstairs.
Agreed. Well, the weather works kind of like our concentration. Everything in nature works the same, which is one of the things I like to, think about and then I write about, including us, because we're part of nature. So nature likes to concentrate around points of, gravity. So when humans concentrate our minds on things, it can create these weird, gravitational vortexes, kind of like happen in weather, when it aggregates clouds around a certain point.
So let's talk about witchcraft. First of all, would you say that you are a practicing witch?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
That's my profession. I do it for my whole job, yeah.
What is a witch to you?
That's for me, I can answer it for me, but it's one of those words where a lot of people have their own definitions. To me, I like to go with the original meaning of the word, which was one who knows or wise one. And to me, I'm kind of like a nerd who just wants to understand and know stuff. So a witch is kind of someone who has an irascible tendency to try to almost obsessive compulsively figure things out and know about what the world is, what themselves are, what other people are. So it's really one who wants to accumulate wisdom and knowledge.
Maja, why do so many witches have bad reputations when they're really not bad people at all? But people just tend to think that the minute you hear the word witch, you think of the evil person from The Wizard of Oz.
It's a hugely stigmatized word in one of the few religions that, some of the practices of witchcraft, like divination, are still illegal in some places in the United States. Even though, of course, there's supposed to be freedom of religion, you can get arrested for practicing some of the practices in some places. But I'm not talking about, terrible things like animal sacrifice. I'm just talking about straight up, some of the divination practices. So it has accumulated this huge stigma. I feel like the reason of the negativity was because of the Christian religion that killed all of the pagans. This was during, ancient Rome, mm-hmm. and Egypt and Alexandria. When the Catholic Church began, there was Emperor Theodosius, and he ordered that all the pagans be murdered. So, like, millions and millions of pagans who practiced witchcraft or paganism or nature worship, if they did any of that openly, they were killed. And so that kind of practice spread all over Europe, just killing all the pagans as a way for Christianity to just dominate everything. And that really did happen. And then by the time around 300 AD rolled around, they didn't even have anyone left that, you know, knew the hieroglyphic language. They had burned so many of the books. They had just, like, completely eradicated it. So I think the common modern stigma of witches is left over from that, you know, kind of witch holocaust that happened. So people still have this taboo stigma around it.
And with this stigma, of course, it carried through to the United States, Salem, Massachusetts, burning yep. witches at the stake. It never stopped, did it?
It did not. And ironically, you know, most of the folks who were against witches, their own values and moral systems were to try to not judge other people and certainly not to assume that some other human is evil. So there's a lot of irony in people who judge witches as evil because, of course, most of it just becomes scapegoating, right? So a lot of the hatred for witches is hypocritical scapegoating, which we see a lot of going around in different forms, but the witches still get an awful lot of the scapegoat behavior.
I think so, too. Now, when you talk about magic, to you, what is magic?
For me personally, I think magic is talked about and dealt with in all major religions, and it's evident in the world. And a lot of people say magic isn't real, but I advise everyone who thinks that to just go ahead and try it. You can do quick experiments that are really easy, just using concentration techniques. And for me, I feel like magic is perception-based. So I like to describe it like how a rainbow gets revealed when sunlight shines on the water in a certain way. You can see all these colors that you couldn't see before just under regular circumstances. So I feel like most witches or magicians or people who practice these techniques, shamans included, it changes your perception. So you can see things differently, and that's what I think is kind of magic. You'll notice things, these kind of subtle things that maybe other people aren't quite aware of or perceiving, kind of like when you see that rainbow come out of nowhere.
Have you cast spells on people? I doubt if you put curses on people.
I do not. My particular practice, I don't do any of those vengeance things. I'm more of a healer and empowerment type of witch. So I focus on fixing things rather than breaking them.
Good. But a spell is a good thing, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And we all use spells all the time with our language. Spells involve, you know, spelling and the language and words that we use, even our thoughts that we have towards each other, you know, and other people. Most people put curses on people all the time. They're not even aware that they're doing it. And most of it is because of emotions, right? So people will take something personally and they'll have a certain emotion about it, and then they're going to get a kind of vendetta or emotional reaction to the other person. And this is going to feed a concentration of hate to the other person that they're going to kind of shoot at them like a projectile.
And if they do, what happens?
Well, I think in my experience, we affect each other as humans. I mean, you know, there's a lot of ways you can learn how to not get so affected, and this is like an art form, right? That's when you become kind of like a cowboy or the font, right? Where you can just shake it off.
Right.
And one of my teachers, Dr. Calvin DeWolf, he's a Native American, and he teaches to learn how to be what he calls impeccable. So that when you become impeccable, you can't get like touched by people. So when people bother you, you don't really let it get under your skin. But a lot of people, like, you know, if someone even talks trash on you on the internet, it really affects you, and you your mind kind of dwells on it, and you don't like that that person did that, and then you can really get sick. So a lot of people, it depends on kind of how much you get affected by trolls, you know, and trolling. I'm sure, you know, you as a public figure, it's kind of hard to avoid never getting trolled when you get certain levels of exposure. So you kind of have to learn to thicken your skin. But some individuals, if they're prone to influence, they can easily get hurt if people kind of focus negative energy on them.
Well, you learn how to thicken your skin, because a lot of them are hiding behind false names, phony emails, and what have you.
It's all garbage. Yeah, totally. But sometimes, you know, people don't know these things, and we don't learn these things unless you get bullied, you know, in school, and you kind of get confronted with it. So a lot of folks, I think, kind of lack that ability to brush things off or believe in themselves or have enough self-confidence where those things don't affect them. But it really takes them down.
There's a lot of hate out there, Masha. A lot of hate.
Yeah. It's so bad. You know, like in the last few years, it's really, everyone's so polarized, and there's so many projectiles being shot at everyone. It's out of control. I have nonstop work, I'll tell you what.
So would you say you dabble in the occult?
I do, yes. I do a lot of occult practices, but occult just means it's like a perception thing where you can see behind things or see through things, you know, like the word occult actually comes from, for example, when a planet kind of crosses in front of another planet in astronomy, almost like an eclipse. So it's when something is sort of shadowed over and you have to work on seeing through something. So that's all occult means. So I do a lot of different techniques that practice being able to see things differently or see through things.
And you, with the things that you have done, which primarily is pretty enlightening, have you come across, though, dangerous things or demonic things, Masha?
Yes. Yes, I have. There's a lot of mind realms that you can go to. So the human mind is where I practice a lot, because I do meditation a lot, and I use techniques that I learned from Dr. Calvin Wolf. And there's certain places in the human mind which are very deceptive. I call it deceiver. You know, it's talked about in every religion. It's like when Jesus goes to the desert and he meets, you know, Satan. Buddha has to deal with it under the Bodhi tree. He calls it Mara, right? It's this kind of anti-force that will meet your mind and try and trick you. And it will eat people's minds and trick them into thinking things or believing certain things or even having certain attitudes which are not true. The best way I could describe it is in The Catcher in the Rye that J.D. Salinger wrote, the kind of attitude, right, that the main character has. He adapts this attitude and it starts to really denigrate. And so the big dangerous things in a lot of these practices, especially meditation, which humans have talked about for, you know, a long, long time, is that there are these very strong negative forces that you can come into contact with, and you have to really discipline your mind and discipline your thinking so you don't get influenced by them, because it's really dangerous. And I've seen people in, you know, the yoga communities have a hard time with it. You know, it kind of, I feel like, is a little bit at the heart of a lot of addiction issues that people have, where they can't, like, get through something, you know. Obviously, there's chemical things involved in that, too, but there is those kind of, like, dark attractors that pull people into things.
What is it, and what could happen to someone who doesn't have that ability to fight this stuff off?
Well, they really, I mean, in my experience that I've seen just in my life, sometimes that's what takes people to suicide, is they get this kind of mind virus, you know, and it turns into a vortex, and their thinking becomes so singular they can't think of any other thoughts. So it turns into like a pinhole, you know, and gets so concentrated. And it's not even their own fault, because it's like this force, like gravity, that kind of takes it. And so they can't pop out of it. So it they'll do self-harm, they'll harm other people. I feel like when people get taken over by the like a thought of vengeance, and then they'll do these very irrational things. You know, there could be chemical reasons. Again, like I said, who knows? But I feel like if you listen to what a lot of those people say when they get taken over by something like that, they're literally like having some obsessive thing that they just can't, they can't fight it, they can't get out of it. So it'll drive their behavior, and they'll do things that maybe they would not have otherwise chosen to do, like a possession.
Sure. Do people come to you for help?
Yes, I get a lot of folks with almost every kind of problem you can think of will contact me. Mostly it's when they have not been able to get help in any other way, right? So if they contact me, they're mostly screwed because they've tried everything else.
Are they desperate by the time they get to you?
Not everyone, but there are folks that are, because they're like out of, out of ways to solve a problem. So usually my clients will have a problem or an issue, and they have not been able to solve it. So I try to use my tools to help at least get understanding. And, you know, often we can really crack the nut. So it's everything from relationship issues to health issues. Sometimes they'll have spiritual things going on with them, financial stuff, obviously, as well. So I work kind of to help solve their problems.
Give us a real quick example of somebody who has come to you with a specific issue and you fixed it.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, just an immediate one that popped to the top of my head would be, I had a client and she was very distraught because this is like a very common one. She felt like she was not going to find a relationship. And so she was just going to give up and had like low self-worth. So through using divination, and we used, I think, I Ching and tarot cards, we helped her to understand, number one, that the things she was thinking were not true. Again, she had been pulled into like thinking a belief about herself or reality, and she couldn't pull herself off that focus, right? Which was an irrational belief.
Sure.
So the divination was able to show her that her thinking was incorrect. And it provided her with, we got actually a date for when it was going to happen, which happened to be Easter. And I was like, okay, well, that's weird. So it showed up that on Easter it was going to happen. And then she notified me that, in fact, on Easter she met the man that she's now married to. So it was a very, like, here's the problem, we worked through it, and then there was a direct solution to that problem.
Well, that worked out in a good way.
It did, yes. And it was really, I think, because she changed her attitude around it and made a little door for that to enter. But, you know, who knows what really happens. But we did see it happen in sequential order.
You don't do exorcisms or things like that, do you?
I have done exorcisms for health stuff. Like, for example, I had one client, she had yeast infections that she could not get rid of. And so we did an exorcism which focused on releasing the parasite. And what I did was yeast likes to eat sugar. So I put like a bait of sugar next to us when I was performing it and tried to drive it into the sugar instead of in her body. And she had been having the yeast infections for maybe 5 years, and they subsided afterwards.
That's amazing. And yeah. Let's talk about your new work when we come back in a moment, Maja, and you can talk with us about supernatural creatures next. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Maja Dawu with us. Her latest work is called A Witch's Bestiary, Visions of Supernatural Creatures. Maja, tell us, if you could, Maja, about the supernatural creatures that we're talking about here.
Yes, my pleasure. You know, it's funny, there were, in the medieval ages, a lot of bestiaries that they would make because all the, you know, monks and budding scientists were trying to track all of the flora and fauna on the earth that they saw. And so modern scientists would look back at these, and there would be all these regular animals, you know, that we see all the time, And then there would be all these crazy animals in the same books with all of the regular normal ones. You know, things like unicorns and griffins and minotaurs and all of these, you know, either human hybrid type of beasts or just completely, you know, different animals all hodgepodge together. So they would all be in there. And a lot of the stories in the bestiaries, they would be used to represent allegorically some part of humanity, such as an emotion or maybe some kind of, you know, almost Aesop's fable type of tale.
Now, these creatures, were some of them dangerous?
Oh, yeah. Some of them could totally eat you.
Oh, great.
Well, there's a lot of animals that, you know, can eat us. That's one of the things about nature. It does that. So some of the mythological beasts were very dangerous. Manticores were man-eaters. The cyclopses were usually cannibals, as were the giants. So there were all of these different creatures within the bestiaries that were, you know, life-threatening to humans.
What were you trying to learn from these creatures?
I tried to approach them in a much different way than most folks do. I looked at some of the folklore, but I really wanted to see how they were trying to represent a higher level of consciousness of humans or some kind of supernatural realm. So most of my research looked at them from a different perspective or a different angle to see how they were psychologically used to show some part of human nature or, you know, a higher enlightenment capacity that we might have in our mind.
Was there a certain creature that gave you more information or, you know, taught you the most that you were researching?
Yeah, there. I would have to say the big stinker there was Baphomet. I don't know if you're familiar.
No, that's that horrible-looking creature, isn't it?
Very scary, goat-headed god, which is usually considered satanic. And there's a big brouhaha with Baphomet right now because there's a lawsuit.
There was going to be a monument built with him, right?
Correct. And then there was a show on Netflix which appropriated it. So there's currently a battle over Baphomet, and he was the one that came up the most in my research. So I thought it was kind of funny.
Was that going to be made in Detroit?
I think it was Arkansas.
Arkansas.
Yeah, exactly. So the Baphomet, most folks, you know, think it's satanic because it has a goat head. But my research revealed it to be absolutely the opposite of that. And it actually represents someone who has seen the face of God.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, it's got a human body, though, right?
Correct. It has a human body. It's usually hermaphroditic in most of the portrayals, which is also how angels are portrayed most of the time. And I had written a little bit about this research in my previous book called The Secret Source. When I was researching angels, I made like a little link and connection. And there's this strange Hebrew and Muslim reference to both Moses and Muhammad. And they also talk about Alexander the Great this way, and also Enoch, who becomes Metatron, where when they ascend to heaven and they see the face of God, there's this thing that happens where their face starts to shine with light, and they look like they have horns on their head. And the way they say it is these ram's horns. And the name Baphomet, if you study it, it's actually related to the name Muhammad. And it's trying to depict someone who has ascended to heaven, and it's just so crazy that everyone thinks it's satanic.
Now, Pan had a human head and body, but a goat's bottom or something, right?
Right. He was Reverso.
Now, is he considered evil or not?
Most people consider Pan evil as well, which is pretty silly because he's just nature. So Pan really represented, you know, nature. And like most of the beasts that I talk about in the bestiary, humans are part of nature, and we have an animal instinct and drive inside of us. So Pan was mostly representing those parts, what some people call our lower natures or our instincts, you know? So I guess that has been demonized because who wants to admit that they're this biological creature running around? We all like to think of ourselves as something a little more sophisticated, I guess.
Where do gargoyles fit in? Are they in there?
Gargoyles are, I didn't put those in the book, but they are, they're supernatural guardians. So the gargoyles are kind of more like daemons, which is where we get the word demon. But a daemon is like a guardian spirit or a guardian angel, kind of like the Sphinx as well. So there's these, I talk about the Sphinx in my book, and some of the supernatural creatures are not dangerous to humanity, but they actually guard and protect us and sometimes communicate with humans. According to a lot of literature and references, some people come into relationship with some of these supernatural creatures.
I got to tell you, most of the creatures in your book look evil.
They're scary. It's true. But evil is really just comes from fear, right? If we're going to say something's evil, mostly it's because we don't understand it and we're afraid of it.
What's the Minotaur?
The Minotaur is a very special lesson for people. The story of the Minotaur was that it was a bastard child that was kind of hidden away and tucked away, and then it grew into this huge problem that just kept needing to eat everything, and it started eating people, and it was very dangerous. So that usually represents when you keep a secret or try to hide and repress something, it's just going to cause you a lot of problems later. But more significantly, the Minotaur inside of the labyrinth is talking literally about the mind as a maze, as if your mind is a kind of maze, and there is this thing in there that can eat you. Like I was talking about earlier, that deceiver or that negative energy vortex. And so the Minotaur represented these secret shames that are in our mind that we have to kind of labyrinth around, right? So that they don't take us over.
It sounds like you're trying to find good out of any of these creatures, are you?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to look at both sides. Yeah, so I think there's, you know,
I mean, like, you've got a vampire in here. There's a chapter devoted to vampires.
Oh, well, here's one of the good things about the vampires.
There's a good thing about a vampire?
Absolutely.
You wouldn't say it if you got your neck bitten.
Maybe if I had done something wrong, right? It's all perspective. So one of my favorite vampire stories is of Kali, the goddess. Okay, so all these cannibalistic giants had gone crazy and they were wrecking everything and eating all the people. And so Kali comes down to save the day and she starts drinking all their blood. So she takes the form of a vampire in order to conquer these cannibals that are just running rampant all over the place. So that was the case of a goddess who becomes a hero by being a vampire.
Huh. I'm not sure about the vampires.
Well, some things, you know, if you have, like, let's say you have a very dangerous creature and you can utilize it for a purpose, then its danger gets put to good use, right? So if there's something that might be, you know, a threat, if you just think of a way to use it, like, think, for example, if you have a bad habit or a disposition to something that's a little unsavory, if you can think of a constructive way to use it, it becomes a superpower. Like, say you like to fight or get in fights. Well, if you join the MMA, you can make a lot of money doing it. It becomes this, you know, venerated talent for this otherwise, you know, destructive thing. So if you kind of focus and make use of these evil things, they can have a purpose.
I'm going to mention very quickly the creatures you've got in the book.
Sure.
Dragon, Baphomet, which we just talked about, Pegasus, Giants, Cyclops, Griffins. I'm going to have you explain what they are. Cherubims, Demons, the Golems, Chimeras, Phoenix, the Owns, and the Fish People, the Minotaur, Juggernaut, Basilisk, Centaur, unicorn, werewolf. Those aren't nice. Cerberus, vampire, and the manticore, and the apocalypse beast. So some of those, Maja, don't seem very pleasant.
They really don't, and they've taken over human subconscious minds for, you know, thousands of years. These beasts have stayed with humans in our stories. They're something that really grips our awareness and attention, you know, like a lot of the fairy tales as well. When there's some of these darker elements, those are the stories that you don't really forget.
What's a griffin?
So the griffin is a little like a sphinx, and mostly they are part lion. They usually have wings on them.
Are they alive?
Yes. So in some of the Greek sources, they had witnessed actually seeing these weird hybrid creatures. Some people have different theories that they weren't actually real, but they were, you know, maybe prehistoric birds. Giant birds, because they would have these eagle heads and then these kind of lion claws. So some people think it might have been that. But representations of griffins and sphinxes are so all over the place. In Persia, you can see them almost everywhere. And even in Roman Catholic churches, there will often be lions guarding the doorways, which are taken from the Egyptian sphinxes and griffins. So the griffins were predominantly doorway guardians. If you go to China, you can see those two lions. I mean, if you go to any Chinese restaurant, you're going to see those two, like, foo dogs at the door, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Those are all in the same tradition of the griffins. So they were gateway guardians, and they would kind of judge you as you entered to see if you were worthy, kind of like, in the never-ending story they had where he had to pass through the Oracle Gate with those two griffins. That's a perfect example of the quintessential representation of the griffin. So there are these protectors, but also they were there to keep out any, you know, unsavory threats or things from sacred places. They had them guarding most of the gates of most of the temples all over the world.
Were there other creatures that you didn't include in the book because you just didn't have any room?
It was mostly, yeah, ran out of room. But I'd love to do more. You know, I easily could expand it because there's so many different ones that have a place in our human story.
You promise you're a good witch, right? You're not tricking us.
No, but if you're going to be real, you have to know and see what darkness is, right?
Well, these are all dark creatures, just about.
The unicorn is in there, too.
Well, that's not dark. That's nice, right?
Right. There's also Pegasus, which I...
Pegasus is good.
He's not too shabby. The Phoenix.
Some giants are good. But
right.
you've got demons in here, golems...
The demons are another kind of misperceived evil. Certainly there are, I guess, stinkers, kind of like fairies. But like I said, most of the demons, that comes from Damon, which is more like a guardian angel or a go-between to the supernatural realm that you can have conversations with.
What's the scariest creature you wrote about?
Probably... That's a good question. I would say the scariest one is the werewolf.
Yeah, those things aren't pleasant.
Probably through all time, werewolves have terrified people. Obviously, wolves can eat you, so there's that innate primal fear that people have of them. But in most of the literature, they were a representation of total chaos, right? That kind of part of nature that is completely chaotic and irrational, where there's no control.
Of all these creatures, though, Masha, it would seem to me that the one that we really have to be wary of, because most of the creatures are physical and they can attack you and hurt you physically. It
yes.
seems like this chapter on demons, they're out for your soul. They're out for your everlasting existence. That, to me, is the scariest part.
It's true, because that has more of an effect than just the physical, right? So, and a lot of, obviously, that gets into the spiritual warfare category, right? Where, like we were talking about earlier, when people get taken by these negative influences, according to most of the legends, there's longer lasting repercussions than even just, you know, affecting your life. It can affect your essence, get into a way deep down level, you know, of what you are.
No question about that. Scary times ahead indeed. Give us your website.
My website is witchofthedawn.com.
Simple as that. We've got a link for you at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, I want to talk about consciousness and how you approach that, Maja. And also we'll take phone calls in our final hour. Of these creatures you put in there, how did you find them all?
Most of them came to me through synchronicity. As soon as I started doing it, it was crazy because they literally would pop up in front of me, or my children would bring me a book with the next one in it. So they would just show up as soon as I started. It was crazy.
Did you want to reject any of them?
There were a couple I rejected, actually. That's funny. One of the ones that I did not want to do was the Berserker, just because that one also had this uncontrollable element to it. It's funny because I included the demons, but there were other ones that kind of spooked me.
All right, let's talk more about what you do as a witch and take phone calls next.